Okay, here we are. Ducks Don't Get Cold Feet, podcast number 24. And we are here with Adelaide's funniest person. And I'd go as far to say as one of the world's funniest people, Amos Gill. Welcome.
Thank you. I like you qualified with Adelaide. And then you went, that's not a lot, is it? It went world. And let's just bring it straight back and just say I'm okay.
Well, I had to pump it up a bit. Absolutely, I mean, it wasn't hard to do. I heard you speak at an event I was at the other day, and it was hilarious. Pretty tough crowd. Like, you know, there's some people in their 70s, 50s, 40s.
Your company's golf day.
You freaking killed it.
Yeah, it was good fun. But, like, the Fringe booked that for me, right? And when we're in the car over there, they're like, now, this is a golf day for a company, so you're going to have to rein in your material a little bit. Let's, you know, I wouldn't swear, wouldn't say any adult themes. And then I ran into you. And you were not what I was expecting for like a company director. And you were like, you better fucking do your wild stuff. We're pissed. Everyone's playing golf. We don't want any lame shit. Go hard, son. And I just looked at the person who booked me and I was like, I told you. People don't, just because you're in a corporate environment, like I look at everyone as an individual. I'm like, that guy is probably the loosest unit in the pub. Just because he's put a polo shirt on and he's with other people doesn't mean he loses his sense of humor. You know, there's a line. And as soon as I attacked your dad for doing role play in the bedroom, I don't know if he does. He may not.
Could do.
And they were very nervous, but everyone laughed and it was good.
Yeah, I think we just gave you don't use one word and other than that, you could be free reign.
Yeah, and it was a good day. And you gave out air fryers to everyone.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest with you, I did think, because the gig went well, I thought I was going to come home and an air fryer would be sent to my house, but you're not the Elon Musk billionaire cool guy that I thought you were. Can I say?
This is your lucky day. It's out there.
It's out the back.
It's out there. Really? Your air fryer is out there. Open the door. Show him the air fryer. We were going to do this at the end.
You're going to do a late reveal.
We're going to do this at the end, but is it there?
No, there's a speaker and a Toyota Camry. I'll take the Camry.
It's a big box.
Why is there a knight's helmet back there?
Oh, mate.
I know I said that you guys are into role play, but I didn't.
Hairdryer.
Yes. I'm not even joking. I did Breakfast Raider this morning. I was like, oh, I've got that podcast. Man, I'm so tired. And my girlfriend goes, do a good job. Get us an air fryer. And I thought that was a joke.
There you go. Sent for you.
Thank you so much.
See?
Hey, it's been really good. Thanks.
See you later.
I came here, got what I wanted.
I got what I wanted. He's out. No, we've got some beers, so we're okay. So I want to dumb it down a bit. Let's go back to the beginning.
Yep.
I think you were born in Perth.
No,
you're born in Adelaide. Jesus,
the research. I was born in a place called Berry.
God, that was Jim Jefferies.
Oh. Well, I am a Jim Jefferies tribute act, so I understand.
So you get what I'm saying, yeah? You're born in Berry.
Born in Berry, because my family are from Renmark.
Yep.
So dad's family, like farmers from Renmark forever. Mum, a Croatian immigrant who got moved to Whyalla first. And then they moved to Renmark, and mum and dad met. Dad was just like a football player, mum was a nurse. And they had me in Berry because mum did not want her co-workers to see her on the big day. So that's why I'm born in Berry.
Okay. Yeah. So there's an actual, is that real?
That's why. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't, would you? Like, if you're a nurse, you don't want to like be screaming and pushing out a baby and probably pooing yourself in front of, you know, then you got to go back to work in 3 months and everyone's like, hey. So I did it in Berry, but like I am technically a Renmark person. That's where my family all are.
So whenabouts did you move to the Big Smoke?
Age 5. So I'm actually one of those people who says he's a country kid, but like, do you know what I mean? I'm always, I'm from the bush. A kid from the bush, but since 5, I was in Adelaide.
Went to Mercedes there?
Mercedes College.
I went to
St. Trey's first.
Were you funny at school? Is it something?
Yeah, I think it, like Jerry Seinfeld always says this. He's like, I thought everyone was funny, and then everyone just grows up and stops being funny, and you just keep going. Do you know? Like, I've got a group of like 7 dudes who is hilarious, and we're still in like a punters club together, and they're funnier than me on the group chat, but they have like jobs, and no one was dumb enough to think that they would turn it into a career, but I was. It's like a level of arrogance. I was just the most arrogant. That's really seriously all it is. To think at 9 to, well, I was like 18, that you're funny to a room full of adults. There's some kind of like delusion up here. And then you just kind of just keep doing it. Then you do get okay.
So even at school, were you like,
yeah,
you
know, but like,
you've naturally, yeah, I think comedians are high level people.
I like to roast the teachers. That's how I get laughs. It's like I think you start as in like impressions. And so I would do impressions of the older teachers. And then there was a guy called Paul Jarvis.
Do you do an impression on him?
All I did for Paul Jarvis, his hair was thinning, but he played for Sturt Footy Club, remember that? And he said, my patience is thinning. And I said, your patience is like your hair. And I must have been in year eight, and I just got like a standing ovation of like applause. And I just never lost the feeling of that. I was like, that is it. Do you know what I mean? That is the best feeling you can have. And I kind of just chased that. I had a really bad patch where I was so obsessed with the laugh. I remember Pancake Tuesday?
Yeah.
We had a whip around and everyone gave me $2. So I had $50 to eat pancakes, forcibly vomit them up and then eat them off the ground. And I did it for $50 and I remember getting all this laughter and then there's a syrup and vomit down me and everyone's laughing and then they walk off and then I was kind of like, oh, my blaze is ruined. This isn't really... Is that who I want to be? The guy who, like a bird, vomits up food and eats it back. But I was like, I got $50.
Well, that's...
I got the tuck shop covered for the next couple of weeks here, you know?
So at school, do you go to uni at all?
Mm.
Yeah, studying law.
I went to Adelaide Law School. I don't know. Well, I did debating at school. That's also why I liked comedy. I was in the debate team and I just loved getting a topic, and I still like this in stand-up. It's just getting a topic that you don't even believe in and just taking the other side and trying to be funny. And then everyone was like, you're quite good at this. You should be a lawyer. Because maths and science, I would have the education level of the year seven. Like I don't understand numbers, nothing to do with science, but English history was fine. So I did law school and I started doing stand-up at that time and I failed. I remember at school, my teacher said to me, I got perfect 20s in history, and my teacher was really cool. But she was like, listen, when you get to uni, you're going to fail. Because you need me to constantly remind you to hand it up, or if it's late and you can't act in the way you've been acting, you've got to reference better. You know, you've got some natural intelligence, but you don't work hard at anything. And then I was like, no, I'll be fine. And then I failed my first two subjects at law school. I just didn't hand up any assignments, late to the exam. I remember my first law exam, I rolled up in a three-piece suit and I brought a briefcase of notes to like make my friends laugh.
Yeah.
And I opened up the briefcase and my notes went everywhere. And I spent the whole exam trying to piece together my notes. And I got a letter from the uni saying that I had unsatisfactory academic completion. And I had my first warning before I was kicked out of law school.
Ooh.
And then I just sort of like bumbled through it. It just wasn't for me.
So then what? Well, your stand-up career started, I got 2010, Triple J Raw Comedy.
Yeah.
Competition.
Did that. That was my first gig.
So how far after uni is this?
It's just like the end of my first year. Because I remember just being there thinking, I just don't want to do this. I need to do something else. And I got a Ricky Gervais DVD because I was obsessed with The Office. And I got the three-pack for Christmas of Politics, Animals and Fame, his stand-up specials. And I just started writing an act for the Raw Comedy. And I told all my friends I'm going to do stand-up. And everyone's like, this is going to be an embarrassment. It was at the old Rhino Room. And I went to the heat and it was me and then another kid from Mercedes called Tom Gaynor.
What?
And Tom Gaynor is Allday, the rapper. He's like a very famous Adelaide rapper who's now like all around the world, Triple J act. And we didn't like each other at school. We were like rival funny men. He was the grade above me. He was like on the stoner crowd and I was in the sporty crowd. So I'm doing my first gig in front of people who are essentially people I consider to be my bullies.
Yeah.
So it was like the nightmare scenario. But Tom and I both got through to the national final. So it was like this great rivalry and we kind of became friends through stand-up.
So you became friends? So it didn't turn into a rap battle?
No, rap battle. Once you go do that together, there's a certain bond you have when you're taking on an audience where you're like, nah, man, you know what? I give you props for getting up there. And we made it through to that. And then I just made some money from that and I just never stopped.
So then from that, if we go on to 2013, you had a fringe show in Adelaide, You've Changed.
Yeah.
And it got nominated for Best Emerging Comedian.
Mm.
How old were you? Like 20?
It's like 22. 20.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a show about breaking up with my girlfriend and she was like, you've changed. Because I did a kids' TV program, the ABC, and made $25,000 and I honestly bought a Calibre suit blazer. And Ray-Ban glasses, and I was like, I went to the Logies last year. She was like, "You've changed." And I was like, "Maybe I have, baby. Maybe that's just television. You wouldn't understand. You're a mere nurse. And I work on ABC3's kids' TV show. So yeah, maybe."
So that was it. So
I went full wanker for like a good 5 years because I had 8 episodes of Wacky World Beaters.
Wow.
And the show was just about how quickly I can become a douche.
So it's kind of, what's it called? It's nothing like Mr. Squiggle then. So it's more.
No, this was the best. Like, the show was me and this girl called Amberly.
Yeah.
Competed against each other globally in strange sports like speed eating in Nagasaki, World Air Guitar Championships in Finland. And
did you go to these places?
Yeah, we'd fly around. I'm serious for the reason the ABC has budget cuts. I'm not joking. Tony Abbott mentioned our show in Parliament as a gross misuse of taxpayers' money because they spent $2.5 million sending this kid's show around. And it's
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. And so I did that program with her. But that was the coolest one of all. That's it there, Wacky World Beaters. And they're still flogging it. It is on German TV. You watched that when you were a kid? Was it shit? It was no good. But it was like the funnest experience ever because I went to 25 countries at like 22.
That's freaking incredible.
It was. Yeah, and I had.
When you applied for that job, how did that come about? So you were like, I'm pretty funny.
I posted a YouTube video, and this is like the total thing about like. Someone told me you start posting stuff on YouTube. And this is like 10 years ago.
Yeah, so 2009 or something.
2009, 2010. Post stuff on YouTube. And I would, and I still am bad like this. I would make something and I'd post it. And if it didn't go viral, I'd just quit.
Hang on. You're not alone. A lot of people do.
Everyone does that, right? And it would kill me. So I'd put all this effort in and I'd be like, man, this is funny. And I made this video called Almost Famous. Which was me walking around the streets of Adelaide pretending I was the most famous man and why didn't people understand? That was the whole sketch and it went for like 5 minutes and it got like 400 views and I remember thinking, well, stuff this. I was really close friends with Alex Williamson at the time who was like the loosest Aussie bloke and he's got millions of followers and I was like, I've got to be like him. But he would just churn it out and I'd get one video, it went nowhere and I just stopped. Quit. But then one day I got a call from this guy called Dan Collis who worked with Hamish and Andy and Rove and he was like, I'm making Gap Year for kids and I've just seen your Almost Famous video and I love what you do, come and audition. And I remember thinking like, if I'd never put that video up, which was not even that good, but it was like 400 views.
Yeah, and thinking nothing of it.
And thinking nothing's ever going to happen. But it was like, well, one of the views was a producer at the ABC. And he goes, can we fly you to Sydney tomorrow? We're going to do a trial for this show. And I was like, not interested in kids' TV. I'm a rock and roll comedian.
Bad
look for me.
Blaze.
Yeah. I don't want to do kids' television. They told me it was an overseas trip. So I went over there and I did the audition on Bondi Beach. And it was fine. I had to do some stuff with some kids. I got into the taxi and I remember saying to the producer, thanks for flying me to Sydney. Got some frequent flyer points. Got an ice cream. What a day. I'll see you never, but thanks for the opportunity.
And this is the start of your... So this is you for the audition.
This is me for the audition because I was just like, I'm never going to get this. I'm not right for them. I got in a car. By the time I got to Sydney Airport, they offered me the job. And I always try to remember that when I go for things now, which is like the reason I was so good in that audition and I got the job is I did not want it. Any other job I've ever wanted, I flub. Yeah. Because I'm like, man,
you're putting in everything.
I'll do anything for this gig, whatever you need. I'll work day and night. Producers and women, if you're trying to pick up a girl, if you're trying to get a job, you cannot show them that you're interested. That is the truth. Otherwise, they're like, ugh, he needs us. Revolting. So I got the job because I was so disinterested. That's how I landed it. And I still have to remember that. To this day, I'm like, you can never show people you can.
It's so true. This is advice you probably shouldn't give kids.
Yeah. It's like you tell every kid, hey, work as hard as you can and be like, stamp your fist down and say, like, I'll do my best for you. And if you do that, they'll go, ugh, loser. This company does not need you.
So as a young adult, you're flying around the world.
Yeah,
so with, are you flying around with your host?
Yep, her name was me and Amberly and
what
the
was
crew.
She, like? She any good?
She's like she was a perfect kids TV presenter.
Oh Jesus,
she's like you. Do you know how you've got that energy?
Yeah.
You've got like a bubbly. You know what I mean? I'm like a I'm a sourpuss. Like if a child made. I mean, like on the plane, I remember the kids were talking and she'd go up and talk to them like, hey, buddy. And I'd be like, shut up. You've been yapping since Dubai. It's like, why am I working with children? But she's perfect. And I knew I'm just doing this for the job, for the money and the opportunity.
Yep.
We got to London and as soon as we landed, we checked into the hotel and they go, all right, we're going to go to a park and we're going to do a scene today where you guys are buskers. Air guitar buskers, and you got to go. I'm like shred, and I was like, "That's lame. I'm not doing that." And she's doing it, and she's cool because she's like, she's completely giving herself to it, which in kids TV you have to do. You can't have an ego.
Yeah.
I wasn't used to that, so I was like, "Why would I?" I'm like, "What's the joke? I'm playing a guitar that's not there. It's a dumb joke. Like, is there a reason I'm doing that?" And I froze up. I couldn't do anything. And I got back to my room and the producer knocked on my door, sat on the foot of my bed and said, hey, we need you to play ball. And that's what the job is. And if you can't do it, you can have a plane ticket home tomorrow. You in or are you out?
And
I just sat in my bed and I called my dad. I remember and I was like, I can't do this. This is shit. This is garbage. And
so your dad's like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm awesome. All you got to do is play an air guitar.
That's seriously, dad works is a driver for Toll Priority. He's like, oh, you played air guitar, did you? He's like, yeah, okay, yeah. Well, I drove to Sejuna this afternoon. It's 42 degrees. I paid nothing. And I'm like, yeah, but there were heaps of people looking. But he was just like, just do it. He's like, you've committed. No one's ever going to like see it, which is not true because every time I go anywhere now, people find that thing and they always go, oh, it's silly gilly. Oh, you silly gilly. But I just threw myself into it and it was the best thing I did at that point was I was like, well, it's not me. It's a kids TV character. And I just did it for 6 months and it was still the best job I've ever done.
And were you writing content for like what you were thinking or you're thinking, well, this is...
No,
I'm traveling on a plane. I'm watching as many movies as I can. Like,
it was just the travel.
Yeah.
Like, why would I go to Taiwan, Helsinki? I mean, there was 10,000 people in Helsinki, and I had to do an air guitar routine in front of them. This is a real thing. Look it up.
Yeah.
It's in Oulu, Helsinki.
Yeah.
Air guitar world. Have you seen that?
No, yeah. I've.
You're the kind of guy that would do that.
No. Really? I would watch. I don't know.
Pretty fun, but like I did that. I remember I was so nervous.
Were they doing like behind the back?
Yeah, this guy called Nordic Thunder, who was like the world champion, who was my coach, and he was like putting together a routine. But this is why it sucked. You're allowed, obviously, all the other people, you're allowed AC/DC or like Iron Maiden, and you're rocking the venue. When I did it, because I was working for the ABC, we weren't allowed to have any real songs, so we had to have royalty free music. So the guy who comes on before me does Thunderstruck and the whole crowd's like, na 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 na. And then they're like, and now Amos Gill from Australia. And it was just like a garage band loop, like, meow, meow, meow. And I'm like,
oh my God.
I
cannot even believe this.
It was just, I still have just the douche chills thinking about how bad that was. However, it kind of broke my ego down where I was like, well, if I can do that, doing a gig for you and some golfers where I get to be myself is not hard.
I mean, it's...
Yeah. It was big. Look at him.
Anyone that's listening, bad luck.
Look it up. You got to
look it up. We actually should put a link into that to have a look.
Well, they still...
That's right.
It's
still going on. It's massive. It's a big event.
I don't know. Well, actually, yeah. Is it happening in COVID? I don't know.
I'll probably be virtual.
I would imagine so. And it's not so rock and roll to have a face mask on while you're air guitar. At least you're not touching. Like, at least you're not sharing a pick. You know, anyway, it's kind of, there's nothing to disinfect. You don't have to disinfect your air guitar.
So, yeah, like, seriously, how did you go from there? Into what you you know, what your first gig, like your first, you've already, you haven't had your first gig yet. You've done that. Then you've gone straight into comedy.
I'm doing stand-up like at that time.
So at that time.
I'm still doing stand-up, yeah.
So you must have used a lot of content from that show.
A little bit, but like the ABC, because the ABC, so what happened was is I think the ABC overlooked that I was a dirty stand-up comedian. Because I was like 20 and I'm doing like filthy material. And then they didn't do their background check. And then when the show was coming out, it's for kids. And they're like, he's got a like horrendous 69 routine.
Shit. So this was at the, so, okay. So now this was at this, you were doing stand up at the same time.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And so I remember them calling me being like, we have to change your name on the kids show. So I'm actually, it's not Amos Gill on that show. I'm William Gill. Because that's my middle name.
That's why it never clicked.
Yes, I'm William Gill because they were like, we can't have parents letting their kids look up Amos Gill and then buying tickets to your show. And then you're opening for Jim Jefferies.
Oh, man. That.
So I didn't even get famous. I didn't even get famous.
You didn't even write a... Yeah,
do you know what I mean? That's what sucked about it because I was like, man, I'm going to be like kid famous. You know, I was like, I'm going to linger out the front of schools, not in the weird way, but just so that like kids would come by and be like, oh, it's... You know, but they're like, no, you're not. Your Amos Gill, that is a character called William Gill. So, Mike, for a while there, a fictional version of me was more famous than me, and I hated it.
So you go and you leave. So you, obviously, they said, "All right, that was your last season.
That was it. Yeah,
the one." And
well, the budget. Tony Abbott was like furious about how much had been spent, and they were like, "We're not gonna. We were meant to go to South America for season two, and I'm still holding out hope that like." Oh, I'm not joking.
I'd like to see that freaking... I would love to see that come out.
Look at this. See this there?
Yeah.
The director sent me this and goes, hey, let's get season you're ready. Two going. I'm like, dude, I'm 30 now.
You've got to do this.
I can't go back to William Gill. I'm like 92 maybe kilos.
Maybe it's a modern version for like 18-year-olds, yeah. You know?
I don't know if that's really got a lot the kids want to see. I'm like, hey, kids. I got a pain medication problem from two knee surgeries. Silly Gilly's going to be doing an episode about the opioid epidemic.
It could go to so many places. I think it needs to. Hey, the message has got to get out there about this epidemic.
Don't take pain pills. You'll get addicted. Shout outs to the creators of Endone. Good product. I've done five ACLs, and my surgeon at this point is like, are you purposely stepping in holes to... continue getting drugs from
there's pharmacy. Other ways to get drugs, guys.
He's like, dude, I'll give you the number of a guy. Stop abusing your ligaments.
Because that's what you want to do, get some surgery, yeah, I'm sure. So 2014, you tour with Jim Jefferies. Now, he's a pretty funny guy.
Yeah, he's like the best from Australia ever.
So you, how did that come about? You obviously, you knew each other. Okay.
Yeah. And he, I actually didn't know of him that much, but he was enormous in the UK.
Yeah.
And then HBO special in America, but he had no name in Australian comedy because Australian comedy is really soft because unfortunately for it, it's like the Melbourne Comedy Festival and this agency called Toke and all their acts come from that and the comedy festival has the same director for a long time and they've got a certain taste that's tailored to like TV and I think the comedy is very, there's a certain style. It's very Melbourne, very Melbourne-centric acts.
Yep.
And I mean, for a while there, they wouldn't put Jim Jefferies in the Melbourne Comedy Festival because they just didn't approve of his content. And like, it is full on, but he was the only Aussie getting HBO. He was the only Aussie selling out Edinburgh Fringe. And so I remember seeing him perform. He performed on an Australian tour at the Rhino Room in Adelaide.
Yeah.
And it was 150 people. That was it.
And Rhino Room's been pretty... Is that like the benchmark for Adelaide?
It's just the only place we've had. And passionate people about it. And he performed and I remember watching it. And I was just like, I was like, holy shit. That's what stand-up can be. And it was intense. Like people are walking out.
Really?
Yeah, it was exciting. It felt like, I remember thinking, I was like, this felt like when I got an Eminem album when I was 11 and people were like, my mum was like, you shouldn't be listening to them. That's why he was so famous. Is it truly felt like stuff you're like, man, I don't know, like, oof, should we be listening to this? And it was exciting and it was live and my manager was like, you get to open for him. And I was super intimidated, but I did a good job. And so the next year he came back, they're like, you can open for him on this tour. And I didn't know what the tour was going to be. They flew me to Brisbane and I got to the Brisbane Entertainment Centre. He sold 10,000 tickets.
Fuck. That's
And I was, you know, still pretty newish, and Jim was nervous because he's like, holy shit, never done 10,000 people. And I had to go out first and I'm, you know, collapsing internally, just like how this is going to go. And Jim goes to say something encouraging to me. He's like, mate, and I'm thinking he's going to settle me. He goes, mate, I'm nervous and they're here to see me. They will eat you alive. And then he just goes, ladies and gentlemen, my opening act, Amos Gill. And I just walked out like, oh my Lord. But like I came off and it was the most, I found I loved bigger way, like that's what I learned.
The audience.
Like, the bigger the audience, the better.
Yeah.
I, to this day, I'm intimidated by a small room than a big room. The big room, once you've got them, it's easy. There's a, so many people you never bomb like that. When it's small, I'm like, they're looking into my soul. Yeah. It's awkward. It is awkward.
It's a numbers game.
100%.
So you go in there with intentions of the first time working with Jim?
Yeah.
You met him previously to
like
that?
Very small, like not right. really at all.
Maybe at an event or?
Maybe like we'd done the one, because he just lived in America, so the one gig or whatever, and we weren't.
I didn't realize he was Australian.
Yeah, well, neither did I.
Well, really. So that's
actually, you know what he did do? I'm going to give him shit for this. He was really blind drunk after this gig we did at the Rhino Room that time. And he picked a pimple right here. And then he wiped it on my shoulder. Right? And I was like, I just went, what the? I'm so, you know, intimidated. I was like, whoa, what the hell? And he goes, oh, stand up for yourself. I just wiped a pimple on you. You're allowed to hit me for that. What I did was just, that was fucked up. So I go, dude, what the heck? Why would you do that? And I like gave him a little shove and he goes, don't ever touch me. I'm a superstar. You're nothing. And then I just like didn't know what to do. And he goes, nah, you're a good kid. You're a good kid. He's like, anyway, do you want to open for me? I'm like, yes. He's like, there's no chance you get to open for me. I'll never hire someone who wants it that bad. I go, okay. Well, I don't want it. He goes, why wouldn't you want it? Could change your life. So he just like was just playing with me so much. But then I spoke to him more and he's just, we had a lot in common.
Yeah.
And he's just like the loveliest, most supportive friend who you wouldn't expect, you know, from his persona to be like that. But once you're in with him, he has been like the most pivotal person in my career.
You know? So that does, one of the things I wanted to ask you, who do you look up to in your industry that you think, fuck, like, you know, you go back to that Eddie Murphy Raw. Yeah. And they're pretty full-on routines.
Absolutely.
And pretty funny.
I liked.
But can you get away with that now? I think we've gone to a stage where you almost can't say things anymore, and it's pretty depressing.
Yeah, you can. You just have to.
Well, I noticed comedians
down the hatches.
Correct.
Social media-wise, you're just going to take a hit. Like it just. I'm one of those people that's like, you can't. You know, you can't say anything, but you can. But then you're just going to have you incite people's hatred.
Yeah.
Like they hate you for whatever routine you did. Even though it's just jokes, they'll come for you. And you just have to be able to wear it. Because I'm like, oh, these people are soft, PC, but then they attack me and then I'm immediately soft. Like I'm a hypocrite. I'm like, oh, why are they saying that about me? And it's like, well, you're going to be the big guy who's attacking people with jokes. I know it sucks to wear it back, but you just have to be big enough to go, all right. The reality is, and Jim has said this to me, Ricky Gervais says this in a podcast, it's like, you don't get into this game for everyone to like you.
Yeah.
The world is, what, 7 billion people. To have a comedy career, all you need is like, you could be famous forever and make a great living. If 100,000 people like you, you're so successful. And if the other 6 billion whatever hate you, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You've just got to find your audience. You make your jokes with them. Where it sucks is where if you have a job and then you make some jokes and some people are offended, they just attack your employer.
Yeah. Okay.
And, or, you know, they attack.
You've been
friends or whatever.
You're not afraid to have a go against anyone. And that is very admirable to see. Because I think as your role, when we start censoring comedians, I think we're in for, I don't think we're in for a good time. And it's good to see you're not afraid to step up. It might be baby boomers you're not afraid to say something to. Millennials, you're not afraid.
Well, here's something that I say to people who get angry. And I think you either have this brain or you don't, and it's hard to explain to people otherwise. Some people just don't, and they're not funny. They don't get funny. Funny's not important to them. They think the world is really serious, and that you should be serious about it. And so, for instance, I make jokes about like a women's footy league, or I make jokes about God knows what I'm attacking. And people will be like, oh, that's a really sensitive issue. Why did you make jokes about it? And I'm like, man, my cousin died in a boat accident. He's a father of three. It was the most tragic thing to my family. And the day of the funeral, my brother and other cousins were making jokes about it because, like, it's our way of getting through bad times.
Yeah.
My grandmother has dementia. It's like tearing our family apart the way that it's going down. We laugh. We instead of sitting there all feeling glum,
it's a release.
We're like, let's make light of this.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that we don't respect her, but like, that's what humor is there for. Humor is best served when life is shit and you go, well, instead of us all being glum, let's just say the worst things, the bleakest things, and have a light moment out of it. And so when someone says to me, oh, how come you didn't show any respect to the AFLW? It's like, I'm showing you as much respect as I showed my dementia-riddled grandmother. Like, what do you think you get better treatment? Like, I mock my mum, my dad, myself, my girlfriend. Do you think I'm going to be nicer to you? Like, who? Why are you so special?
Yeah. My wife's the same. When she's scared or frightened, she laughs.
Yeah.
So, when I proposed to her, she just started laughing.
Are you sure? You didn't do it in a bad way. Where did you propose?
The hot air balloon. Okay. And she was just like,
big cliche.
And I'm like, yeah, yes, no. And she just started laughing. But I think I'm from that kilt of like, to you got to laugh a lot.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they did that study. Kids, they laugh, you know, 5,000 times. Then adults laugh 5 in a day.
Yeah, yeah. And so sad.
Yeah.
Like, I'll never forget that when my... That time when my cousin had died and we were all like crying or whatever. And he was like the table tennis champion of my family. And I just remember saying to my cousin, man, I'll tell you what sucks is like that coward died before we could take the crown off. Like, that is one way to give up, you know, to quit like that. That's why he died in the hospital, because he refused to lose this Christmas. Now, that is... not a sensitive thing to say, but do you know what happened? We all laughed and we were like, yeah, man, he was great at he was the best person in our family. He was great at table tennis. And that's us saying he's not going to be around. Let's laugh at it. But there are some people who would be like, wow, that's, to say that is awful thing to say. And probably there's members of my family that would feel like that. But you just go, sorry, that's how I'm dealing with it.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do? You want me to roll on the ground and be depressed and not come out of my room for 5 days? It's not me.
And that's why you can do what you're doing, because it's you. Like, when you're talking comedy, you would have done some great shows.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
Yes, I've had a few good ones. I've had a lot of bad. Like, I'm still at the point where there's been more bad than good. Oh,
get fucked.
No, because when you start.
I find that so hard to. Like, I look at the R crowd and I've gone and watched a shitload of what you've put up on YouTube, which obviously you're putting your best shit up.
Very rarely do I put up my gig at the Czechoslovakia Club 4 weeks ago, where a Czechoslovakian man was like, this is crap, 100% crap.
Really?
I like John Cleese. This is a crap. It's like, there you go. He likes John Cleese. Well, I'll give you the Fawlty Towers box set. Now, pay me my pierogi and fuck off.
I find it, I'm assuming you would have had way more better show, but if you're talking Australia, is there a gig that comes to mind? Yeah. Best gig?
Rod Laver Arena, Jim's Tour. Like, just because the sheer size of like being at Rod Laver was, it's like the tennis grand final.
Yeah.
You know, you're in Federer's dressing room.
And you can feel it. Like, you can feel the crowd.
And I remember thinking, well, this will never. And that is another thing I've had to come to terms with. Is like, Jim is so big and I do the room with him. And I sometimes think to myself, well, you know what? Maybe this will never happen again. So, like, enjoy this. I'd love for it to happen for me, maybe. But it probably won't. And so, we just all enjoyed it and we had, like, just the best. The time was just so slow when you're up there and I was like, just enjoy it. And that was I actually told this story the other day. That's where Michael Gadinsky produced the show, the legendary record producer. And he put on that big gig and then he took us to the Mahogany Room in the Crown Casino. Crown. And Jim won $25,000 betting with some of the tour money. And we went up to our room and he put $100 bills under everybody's room on the hotel. And he was like, yeah,
I'll wake up in the morning and be like, oh, awesome. And I'll know that I gave everyone $100. And I was like, that's pretty cool. And then Jim went to bed and I went out with a pen and I flicked every $100 bill out. And I made like a grand. Just like, so I was like, I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Who are these people? They're all rich. I don't need this $100. Like, are you kidding me? They're staying in the like the grand suite and they need the $100. I'm like, what about me? Are you serious? I got a mortgage. I'm dying over here. The ANZ is going to foreclose. You're giving it to Michael Gadinsky's friends.
Such a noble thing to do.
I don't care about them. It's not like I stole it out of the St. Vincent de Paul bin.
Oh, damn.
You know.
So
that and Madison Square Garden with him also.
I was going to say best MSG. Overseas tour.
Yeah, Madison Square Garden.
And I'm assuming that would have been massive. It is the number one. Like, I'm a believer.
Yeah, believer.
And watching, like, his highlight of his career was selling out Madison Square Garden. And it was
again, it's quite sad that all my career highlights are basically being the fluffer for another man. Like, for my own career, I've had some good ones. But, MSG was just the coolest day because we went in, did the sound check, wandered around New York, got a slice of pizza, then did the gig, had a great show, and then the Wu-Tang Clan invited us to their after party.
Get out of town. Yeah. No.
The Wu-Tang Clan had an after party, and the reason we knew them is because Jim is good friends with Russell Crowe, and Russell Crowe is friends with the Wu-Tang Clan. So Russell's at the show, and then he was like, do you guys want to come to a Wu-Tang Clan party? And we went in, and we were like the three only white guys there.
And did they ask you what you do?
Yeah, well, I think they would some love of them you, had watched the show. Yeah, you know, watched okay. Him, and I went up to a couple of the guys and I was like, yeah, I was on tonight. It was a pretty good gig tonight, wasn't it? And they're like, were you on? And I'm like, yeah, I was the guy on first. They're like, oh, we walked out. We went and got a drink. We came back for Jim. I'm like, well, I was on, so. And I'm trying to like talk like I'm like, MSG's a good venue. It's a pretty good venue, isn't it? Yeah, I'll be back. I'd probably book it again. I was pretty happy with it.
Like, was a cool party? Was it as a party as you could imagine?
Nah, not really. You know what? Every time you go to a cool thing, you're like, I'm still me. I'm still awkward. Still on my. Like, it doesn't matter what party I get invited to, I'll still be at the back lot.
Yeah. On phone.
Just on my phone.
Bullshit.
Put up a gram. Just be like, killing with my boys. Haven't said a word to anyone. You know, it's pretty disappointing.
Making the most of
it. They were nice, but they don't want to talk to me. They want to talk to Jim. You know, my job is just to sit there and...
Fuck, if Jim wouldn't be where he is if it wasn't for you.
Let's cut that up and send it to him, and my career's over.
Can we cut that up and send it to him? I think we got to call him out on the pimple story,
But too. Then the other night for me, I would say I sold my record tickets the other night at Gluttony, and so that's been my favourite. Because post-pandemic, it was like, I didn't know what to expect this festival, truly.
I'll go as far as saying you are the number one act in the world right now.
There's some people in Florida, but no. If you're selling big, I think Ross Noble would be selling the most tickets right now in the world.
Well, you know, he's not here.
Yeah.
So we can comfortably say.
I've had a good run.
Yes, we can comfortably say that.
Which is but that's so exciting for Adelaide that if you've got a big event on right now, by most chances, your event is the most happening thing on earth, like in Adelaide. Like, who would have thought? Let's be real.
Well, we've said it multiple times. Adelaide was the last place to have the biggest event in the world.
Yeah.
And it's the first. And this COVID, it's definitely, the COVID rush is definitely in your favour at the moment.
Like it was for the supermarket game. Like, those panic buy tickets.
Well, we need people to understand there could be another pandemic anytime soon.
Well, the wastewater, where they're measuring. This
I'm concerned. I think, and everyone should start buying tickets to the Amos Gill show.
Oh, you got to see it now.
Yeah. Like,
truly now.
There's no point waiting for YouTube.
Do you actually think it's someone shedding? Like, they've already had it and they're getting rid of it. Or is there someone walking around and they don't know?
Well,
As an epidemiologist, please tell me more.
I believe they've mistaken the COVID-19 test with the meth test.
Yeah. I do like that there's a lot of meth in the sewage system.
I think switched it. And there, and also we've got to understand the Australian government's bought 20 million shots of COVID vaccine that not even 2.5, not even 5 million people want to have.
Yeah.
So there's 15 million shots of COVID vaccine that they need to get paid.
Yeah, yeah, they do.
Not a conspiracy person at all. Okay. Like,
you're saying that they just found that in there.
If my mic could drop, I could walk out.
You're a retailer.
Yeah.
So you understand retail. You've got to create demand.
And the thing I want to know, does anyone know how much a COVID vaccine shot has cost?
Like per shot?
Yeah. What did the Australian government pay for it?
Oh, I mean.
No one fucking knows. No.
I like that you looked at like she's going to know over here.
No, but she
Hey, Jamie, pull that shit up.
But no one knows. No. But your show, clearly cracking, Adelaide Fringe.
Well, people are supporting local stuff a little bit. But there's this problem in South Australia where we keep saying, hey, support local. But you still got to be like, you know, I hear a lot of support local and then the product's garbage. And you're like, but at the moment, the local is good.
100%.
You know, there's people, and the reason our local product is good in the Fringe is because we stayed open for more than the Melbourne people. So we're match fit. We've been running gigs. People's shows are good. There's things to talk about. This is when comedy is good. Again, this is what I'm talking about. When the world's bad, the comedy should be good. When the world's good, I don't like the comedy. It's light. We need comedy now.
So I agree. $19.50 a dose.
That's not bad. You can get that at Drake's for $12.50, I've heard.
So what's 1950 times 15 million? And that's the problem.
It's also $35 a shot at the Fruville Foodland. Just comes in nicer packaging. And a guy plays the piano when you get injected. Just to put you at ease.
That's like 2.9 billion.
$292 million. But that's like two planes.
I'm not impressed with that argument. No, that's too cheap. Where's that from? China?
No, that's US prices.
Yeah.
Hey, how are you going with China? Do they buy your... You don't ship to China or anything, do you? You don't sell baby formula to them? No?
We used to, I reckon.
My baby formula stocks are taking a dive. My bub is down. I'm like, let the Chinese do what they got to do. I don't care who they're harassing. I got stocks. I got wine to move. That's what happens when you buy stocks. You become evil. You're like, there's a genocide, but come on. They used to buy almonds. I got Almond Co.
Yeah, you do. You fucking do. It's
That's what I did with my time off. I took my super out and just like thought that I was all of a sudden Warren Buffett.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I was just like, I'm locked in. I took 10 grand out of super, which is like whatever.
When was this?
I reckon I did it July.
I was just like, I'm Warren Buffett. If only you bought Bitcoin.
I didn't do Bitcoin. That's the one I didn't understand. But I went and bought Afterpay. I bought Afterpay at $20 a stock and I sold at 60 because my girlfriend needed a loan. And now when it went to 120, I'm
such
like,
a nice guy, mate.
Absolutely ruined me.
You are a nice guy.
I'm on the comps, but don't look at your Comsec there now because it's just awful. I didn't understand you could actually lose. Look at that. Today, down 1500 LRS.
Well, you can. Oh. But hey, I've just seen your ticket sales come through.
Yeah, I know.
See?
Look, if you're buying stock, buy it in me, but don't buy it in LRS. That's an absolute howler. Look at that. Down one. Whoa. Jesus Christ. This is the longest, like.
Have you?
Everyone my age has replaced sports betting with Comsecing. He's on it. IOU. I got on IOU, man. IOU, I lost $4,000.
IOU is a long-term play.
Is it a long-term play? Yeah. Who do you guys use? Who's your BNPL? For Drake's.
I use Taylor Collison's. Shameless plug, Campbell Taylor.
Who's that? Can you buy stocks in that?
Yeah. No, you can't buy it, but he buys stocks for you. Right. It's the, you know, it's when you got someone else doing all
No, but
work.
Do you have like, can I buy groceries at Drake's on Zip?
No, you can't, but I encourage you to save up enough money for the groceries.
I mean, you're not doing too well when you Afterpay a can of Dolmio.
Well, you got to understand. So Zip and Afterpay, they charge that retailer between 5% and 10%.
right? That's where their money comes.
Yeah, so that's why for us, so we're not even making 5 to 10%. So it's a real tough one for us to say, yeah, let's have it.
Right.
So
I said that I bought Afterpay and Zip to a friend.
To
a friend's family. And then they were like, oh. The room went quiet and they're very like progressive family.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't support that company model.
There's nothing wrong with the model. See, how
no, so they were like, it's immoral. It's people. And I was like,
well, they don't know what they're talking about. So the model works by people, they buy and it doesn't affect their credit rating. So that's how they've got through. So it doesn't come up on the system affecting the credit rating. It comes up on the system as a lay-by. So that doesn't affect credit rating. Hence why people can go there and get $1,000 to $2,000 almost instantly.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as they make the repayments, they don't lose. The retailer is getting charged 5 to 10%. So the retailer is paying for that luxury.
Right.
Well, there you go.
Well, I bought one thing on Zip. I bought this on Zip. And I have paid off $18.
How much does she cost?
And it's my girlfriend, Louisa. She cost me $8,000. But I got her on Hum.
Well, I don't even know what Hum is, but
Hum is the third one.
It
is? Yeah, that's the one that you, if you go to like JB Hi-Fi, they're like, get on Hum. Like, there's so many buy now, but it's kind of like streaming services.
Yeah, I want IOU to go through the roof.
Yeah.
That is no doubt.
Yeah.
We're all praying for that, even.
Yeah, you. Let's use this as a pump and dump. Make everyone who listens to this show buy.
If it just flows on a little bit, I didn't realize maybe you could have your own share trading advice.
Like Barefoot Investor kind of thing. That's what I would like to
do. I think it could easily work.
Yeah, I'm like, no one's financially literate. That is the facts.
No, it's a bad...
Like, I know smart people who know nothing about their money. And I always thought that rich people were people who just got paid a good salary. And then I got paid a good salary on radio and I was like, I'm not rich.
Yep.
In fact, I'm not even that much better off than I was before.
Yeah.
And then I had to learn from other people that are like, yeah, you've got to invest your money.
Well, the reality of money... is the more you have, the more you spend.
Mm.
And almost every person on the planet is guilty of that. And, you know, half people in life spend all their money buying things they can't afford, impressing people they don't know to have things they don't want. And it's one of those things in life that it's interesting to see. And when you come from, like, my old man is full humble as... It's saved every fucking penny. Every penny in the business has gone back into the business to be able to lead to get it to where it is today. I mean, that wouldn't have happened if he had bought watches and cars and like.
Well, I did my worst spending. Like, I buy nothing anymore. Nothing. Like, maybe a bike. I like riding bikes.
What sort of bike?
I have a Cannondale, a road bike. Like, I just like riding Norton Summit and stuff like that. Because of my knee injuries,
Have you thought about an electric mountain bike?
No, because I like the hard work. I love getting slogged on there. It's good.
Mate. I burn more calories on my e-bike than I do in the same tracks doing.
Yeah, but, you know, that's not what Lance Armstrong would ride, an e-bike.
Lance Armstrong had no balls.
No testicles and steroids. So I'd rather that. Like, I want the performance enhancement not to be on the bike, but to be in my blood. I don't want an electric motor. When I did radio, I earned the most money of my life, commercial radio.
Yep.
I did that here in Adelaide. Yep.
Pays good. Long hours.
Pays really good. Long hours. Wake up 4 a.m., do the show. Wasn't exactly the content I wanted to do. Didn't love it. And
would you be interested in a JP Amos show? Like, for afternoon?
What, for
like,
hit? Yeah, I drive's the best.
Yeah, when we don't have to worry about getting up early.
But I spent all my money. I remember thinking, I'm making all this cash. Comparative to me, it's not like it was heaps, but it was like a lot of money for me. And I make more, I have a better financial position today earning half of what I earned then because I was just spending every day. I'd just go to the city and buy shoes or whatever because I was so depressed with the job. I bought things so I could tangibly see why I was working so hard.
Yeah.
Because I didn't actually love the work. I liked the money. So I'd be like, I bought Yeezys. And then I just get the Yeezys and just look at them and be like, there they are. That's why I get up at 4 a.m., which is, and it's so empty.
The only thing that it's good is if you like your job, there's nothing better than like actually enjoying getting up and doing the gig. And then the money does mean, like, you need your money to cover your bills and, you know, obviously you need to have avocado and toast and dinner at Gin Long every night. And I mean, it wouldn't be bad to have a Range Rover. Actually, no, money's actually, no, I disagree. Money's very important. I just disproved myself just then. You know, when you'd be like, it's not about money. I'm like, no, a Range Rover is what I need.
Yeah.
Have you got one of them out the back? I can trade this air fryer up.
Hang on. We've got probably got something out there. Maybe trade the air fryer up to a Tesla. Yes. I don't know. But there is a balance with how much you earn to how happy you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a seesaw. And sometimes you can be really happy earning fuck all.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can earn a lot of money and not earn a lot of money but have no happiness. But I think when the happiness outweighs on the seesaw, that when it outweighs it, I think that's the start, and then that ventures to doing things you only love. And not many people on this planet get to do that. And
that's why I like stand-up. It is the one thing that I do it's the thing now that I make money from that secretly I would often do for free. Yeah. I'm still charging for your Christmas function I'm hosting, but that's the truth. I would do most of my stand-up stuff for free. That's how I know that it's the thing that I should be doing as a job, is just like, man, I do love doing this.
And
I'm lucky.
Yeah. So you've mentioned happiness and lucky, because I think they do go hand in hand with the right timing.
Because my girlfriend is like a law student, and she works like hospo jobs, long hours at hospo jobs. And she's in this point in her life where she's like, what am I going to do? I actually don't know how to give advice.
Oh, she should talk to my wife. My wife did law and she fucking hates it. And
yeah,
I keep saying, do something you love. And that's not easy, because not everyone knows what they love.
Correct. I mean, there are some people that just have to work and enjoy their weekend.
Yeah.
And because there is this thing, you might be one of these people, but there's a lot of people like, yeah, everyone's an entrepreneur. No.
No, they're not. No, I think people need to understand that maybe they're not, but there's a difference between being an entrepreneur and being happy.
Yeah. But you know, but everyone's like, yeah, I'm going to do the thing that I love. And I'm like, you don't even know what you love. You got to work that out first. But like, my girlfriend's like, what should I do? And I think, how lucky was I that I just stumbled into this thing, stand up, that I love doing, and now I've made it into a job? Because without that, I don't know what I would do. Like, I can't imagine working where you hate it.
Yeah.
I'd probably work on a farm, because my family had a farm and I liked that. That was like hard manual labor that I enjoyed, because I was alone and I could have a podcast in, and I just like drove a tractor. I either want to be Madison Square Garden or a farm alone.
So different. That's what's funny.
I don't want to be in the middle.
I think most people don't figure it out. And you can give advice, because you give advice on whatever your thoughts are. And doesn't mean it. There's no right or wrong with your advice.
Well, I can't really. Unless you've been paid for it. There's not everyone like, hey, go do sex jokes. They're like, huh? What? I'm trying to be a doctor. I'm like, yeah, what do I know? Try some 69ing material.
Got a fair bit of 69ing material. Let's face it. If no shortage of material with 69ing material.
That's, it is 10% of what I do.
Or that they, you know, you got so many funny gags there. I think, I don't know how it's got to where it's got to, but you end up hosting a football show on Channel 7.
Hmm. Well, that's because the Hit 107 had me, we sponsored the Crows. And like, I love the Crows. And so I just started working with a few of the footballers. And then Channel 7 needed a host, and I did that, but I was so bad.
Yeah.
Well, I was okay. I just don't like this hosting.
Yeah.
On tonight's show.
It's not enough freestyle for
us. I had to read an auto cue, and that ain't for me. You know, I was like newsreader stuff. But it was just awesome to be around the Crows.
Yeah.
It taught me one thing. When you're like, you become an adult and you idolize footballers because you grew up watching them. And then I'm like 30 and I'd go to the Crows and I'd be like, oh, it's Brody Smith. And I'm like, yeah, he's like 2 years younger than me. What am I doing? Why am I fanboy? Some 19-year-old's running around. I'm like, dude, he's a Crow. It's like, you can't spell.
You're still working for the Crows.
Look, I love Smithers. He's one of the best footballers ever. I just mean, there are some players where like you have this, you idealize footballers, then you just kind of go like, grow up.
You know, but it was cool to be around it. It was very, and it was their premiership almost winning year.
Yeah.
And then the next year when they collapsed, I was just like,
Hey, that's enough for me.
I'm good, actually. It's a bit sad. Well, I've got a job offer from Brisbane at the moment.
Doing what?
Triple M Brizzy.
Bro.
I am trying to weigh up like what the hours. Triple M is exciting for me though because it's like the content's way easier for me. Hit sucked because one.
Oh, you'd be controlled.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. No, because it's like it's the target market is the 35-year-old female, and I remember being like, "What am I?" And they wanted parenting.
Oh, content. They only want me. Like, yeah.
Meant to do? What am I meant to do? I
cut my hair. You're pretty good looking guy.
I was 102 kilos when I did that.
Not now. I'm look at you.
85
you're
now.
Fucking less than me.
Fat I got.
How much do you weigh now?
Maybe like 85 or something. I got so fat in radio.
81.
81. Yeah, you're lean, man.
Oh, you look lean.
I've pumped weight back on in the fringe because I've just been
drinking.
Not just that, the late night dinners. See, out of fringe, I would just like.
Aren't comedians all on the coke and don't eat? I don't get it. I'm confused.
No, coke's over. Mate, comedy's not fun anymore. Everyone's like, that's what all the old guys say. They're like, it's too professional now.
Oh,
like, the old guys were partiers. The new people are like, yeah, I've got to CrossFit in the morning and.
you know? Get fucked.
Yeah.
What?
Everyone's gone like.
Are you recording? We on?
Yeah, everyone's gone.
No, but I'm not a comedian. Like, so if we talk about comedy, I totally admire people, first of all, that get on stage at any level.
Don't admire these people. These people are degenerates.
Attention seekers. No, I think, hang on, I might not be talking about the ones making a living from, but anyone that goes up and says, I'm going to put it out there, that takes kahunas.
Well, particularly for most of them, because most of them are terrible.
Terrible. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But does their friend not go, hey, Jane, I watched your routine and you guys could fucking shut up. that wasn't part of it. I watched your routine and it was really bad. Is it like when you go out and you see the chick and she's just wearing clothes that maybe she should have worn like 40 years ago?
Oh, yeah, when you get that guy in the muscle shirt and you're like, that's now just a flub shirt, bro.
I've probably been guilty of some of my tight white shirts. But
does he have any like fashion choices where you're like, man, move on?
Yeah, dude. What's
the worst thing he wears? Any of his casual clothes. All casual clothes. Are you a hype beast? Do you wear like BAPE?
No, I don't care. I actually don't care. Yeah, I just wear t-shirt and.
Okay, you're a proper entrepreneur. You do the.
No.
the Levi jeans, the black t-shirt. You do a lot of this. Jeffy Drake.
Oh, mate, I fucking wish I was Steve Jobs. No. So does someone not say something?
Probably.
Like, where does it get to a stage where they're like, oh, you know, mate, it's maybe you should look at doing like Lego or.
For mate, there's a lot of people where you go, even who I see, there's people who have been there for like 10 years and it's like so un-PC in our community to say like, mate, what are you doing? This isn't for you.
So everyone's that doesn't happen.
Some people take 20 years to find their voice.
I guess I might have been a bit too harsh for something I don't know.
No. Well, too many people don't listen to the audience. I'm serious. We've grown up in a time where everyone's like, you can be anything you want to be. And it's like, good, that's true. You should try. But when you have absolutely no ability, do not continue. You are wasting your life. I would love to play the NBA. I shoot like this. As soon as you did that, there's no fixing that. Give up. You're 5'10", 89 kilo, white man from Adelaide. You will not make the NBA. But for some reason in the arts, you could be that bad and people go, one day he's going to find it. Well, maybe not.
I
got a friend who quit his full-time job to pursue stand-up comedy and he's never made a dime. And he's like, yes. And it's everywhere and everyone's like this to him. Well done, man. You're backing yourself in. I'm like, think about the family you're not going to have now because you're in your 40s in a share house. Because you're living your dream. It's a nightmare, not a dream. So I know that's not inspiring. My God.
So it must be like, it must be hard.
Big Shed Brewing Co.
No.
I just thought you wanted a plug.
No.
6.2%.
Yeah, not 1.8, mate.
Yeah. So 1.8 standard drinks. Oh, that's why as this interview gets longer and longer, I'm just going to start sounding like a drunk uncle. Quit. You shit. This guy's awful.
So
I'll fight Peter Hellier in the street.
So were you growing up on like Fast Forward and
what? No, I was a little. My first thing was Row.
Okay, Live. So you're
Chase's
so
War and everything was like the.
You're under 30.
1991.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's Aussie TV was like Rove Live, the footy show.
God, like, how did you get into? How did you fly into comedy? And what about what you're watching over? Were you watching? Who's like? Nah, it's all.
I didn't get
Saturday
that,
Night Live.
It's like whatever. Nah, he didn't get that. It was just like Dad would watch the Rove Live. That Skid House.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What was that other one that was the sketch show in Australia? Comedy Inc.
Yeah, Comedy Inc. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's same year as Fast.
But there wasn't much stand up. The only stand up you got was on Rove or late Letterman.
Letterman.
And Letterman was like, if I was watching Letterman, I was stoked because it means I was up late. 10-minute
segment, yeah. He was sneaking in a late
He was
night.
Still like, he felt like...
He's got to be the pioneer, doesn't he?
I remember from like year 7 to year 12, I'd just watch Letterman like every night. Letterman and Conan. And that was a big gateway to like seeing how the Americans did comedy and then watching the Australian style of comedy and being like, I'm with the American camp.
Yeah.
Way
more full on.
Way more real.
Yeah, 100%.
Less hokey.
So did you, what can you remember your first American gig?
Yeah, I bombed. Yeah.
So how was it?
No one could understand what I was saying. Yeah. I was spoke too fast.
Yeah.
They didn't know my name and I did some jokes and
you remember one of those jokes that you got deadpan? Now, well, I'm probably casting back.
Yeah, no, I did it. The routine I did was like, there should be a nightclub license. Was the yeah. premise of the bit. Yeah. So you should have a license at nightclubs.
Yep.
And every time you commit a bad act in a nightclub, you get a demerit point lost. So it was like, I used to think like if you fart, you lose a demerit point on the dance floor. If you throw a punch at someone, that's an automatic suspension of license.
Yep.
If you say, I know the DJ, you know, it was just various douchey things that people do. If you wear one of those scoop neck shirts, they measure from chin to the skin and each one of those is a demerit point. And it was like very Aussie, you know, it was about like coward punching.
Yeah.
And I just remember doing it in America and it used to do really well here in Adelaide. And then I realized as I started the routine, the punchline was about Red Square. And I'm in LA and
you're,
I'm like-
You're halfway through.
And you're getting thrown out of Red Square. And these people are like, what? And I have to be like, it's a- club on Hindley Street, South Australia. You gotta check that out. And I remember thinking, what the fuck have I done here? And I kind of got it back to like, that's why I started talking about sex a lot for a while.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you can do this
anywhere.
Here, Myanmar, everyone's trying to get a root. If you talk about personal things, you connect to way more people. That's why I've always wanted to be like, do stories, stuff that we all do that helped me cross international barriers.
It's a safe bet, too, because it's pretty much everywhere.
It is, yeah. Everyone is...
You can't really offend two people. Maybe the gender fluid people. Could you offend them?
No, mate, the only people that would offend is like asexuals. They're like, we don't want to hear about sex, actually. We've made a conscious decision to walk away from the jizz community. Orgasms are a microaggression against our people.
So coming up with content, you must have you obviously brain's a bit wired than most. Do you
Maybe,
come
but I
across
think also
a story?
I'm just thinking about it. Yeah.
Do you come across a story and go, that's a story?
At the moment, I just like to talk about. I go like, what is everyone in Australia talking about?
Yep.
And then how can I?
Bitcoin.
Pick an angle that's different, yeah. Bitcoin. So, it might be like Bitcoin, change the date. Yeah. The Melbourne Cup should be banned. You know, there's that.
Yeah.
I go, try and find the hot button topic, and I go, can I pick an argument that not many people have said
Yeah.
And then justify that with jokes. That's how I like to do it, like a debate. So it's like, I'm going to take an angle that you probably disagree with, try and prove it in a silly way.
Yeah.
That's
how so I like does it. That mean your content's fluid?
My content is fluid. My aim at the beginning was just like, okay, for instance, the Melbourne Cup thing. The routine about that ended up being about, I don't care if horses die for my pleasure because we kill them when they're injured. So they don't suffer. So if I eat meat, I'm okay to kill an animal if it didn't suffer when it died. So by the same logic, if the horse races around, as long as it doesn't suffer when it hurts itself, logically they're the same thing. And then the audience is kind of like, oh, and I go, no, but think about it, because a horse gets euthanasia if it's in pain. So in many ways, the horse has better rights than we do. You shouldn't feel sorry for them. And then the joke was, because my grandmother has dementia and we want to give her euthanasia, but it's illegal. And then the joke was, the only way that we can let my grandmother die with dignity in Australia is if we enter in the Melbourne Cup and hope that she breaks her leg. And then she doesn't have to live her life of horrible pain.
Well, I was going to say, she wouldn't even know she died.
No, correct. My grandpa would. That's what grandpa says. He's like, it's time for her to die. But you know, you can't do that in Australia. But I went on this long journey, and eventually, people are like, "Oh, I see what you're saying." Yeah. That is a joke about euthanasia, told through this bizarre lens of horse racing rights. I'm just that's it. I just want to find an angle. My job is to sit on my ass and think about things in a different way.
Yeah.
The least you can do is try and have a different take, because other people are doing different jobs. When they come out, it's just like, I just want people to go, oh, that's a cooked way of thinking about it. I didn't think of that. That's funny. You know, I don't want to just take... I hate comedy where it's like you just take the line that everyone agrees with.
Yeah.
It's boring.
Yeah, boring.
Boring.
I don't see you as that person.
It's terribly boring. Because like the truth, if it was cool, do a TED talk. If you want to say what's actually right, then just like go to TED. The comedy to me is like talking about the bad thoughts... I don't want to talk about the good thoughts. I want to know, like, what bad thought are you having? Like, I'm doing a joke at the moment where I go, I believe climate change is real and it's the existential threat of my time. But I also put the air conditioner on 16 on a 40-degree day so I can sleep under a doona. That's the truth.
Oh, my God. I do that.
And I'm like, and that's funny because everyone can relate to caring about the... 100%. But you want the aircon on. And then the joke is, because I like to sleep with an anxiety blanket. Why do I have anxiety? Because of global warming. It's a vicious cycle. It's like, do I believe that... It's not me saying I don't care about the planet. It's just saying that all of us are bad sometimes. But too many comedians are just like, I believe climate change is very important. And if you don't believe in climate change, you're an idiot. And I once heard of climate change and I say this, aren't they an idiot?
You go,
and
you hear that
well
now.
Done. Well done you. You really nailed that guy. you're always correct.
So you're
that's funny.
Your content... That do scenarios, or do you go back in time for things that have happened, or when a scenario comes about in present time, that you document it and go, extrapolate.
I go into the notes.
Can you play me your last note?
Okay, here we go.
Is that voice?
This is my last note. My last note is the women's 100 meters will be the headline of the Olympic Games, not the men's. Have you seen that story?
No.
So the new Olympics, the men's 100 will not be the headline event. It's going to be the women's 100 to say that women's races are just as valuable. That's
Story. They're not as fast.
So I've written here, if we want to see slow people run, let's do the all white Olympics. And they can headline. That's my last night. I don't know if that's going to be a routine. We'll see. That's a good response. But it's just such a cheap joke. It's not even good, but it's in there. And then you go try it out.
Oh, that's so fucking good. Like, you know what? I'd like to record that joke when you first say it and just see if... Oh, man.
Here's another one I've got in here. Woman gets second face transplant. This is a real story. And I write, bit offensive to the first face you got. Because, like, if you... imagine if your daughter died and you donated her face to someone.
Oh.
And then she was like, fuck this, I want an upgrade. You're like, hold on. What's wrong with the other one? That's just funny. That is funny.
So you do exactly what I thought. You note it straight off.
Straight off.
So yeah. And it comes up, okay, that's content.
Yeah.
When you're coming up with a gig and specifically, like let's use Adelaide Fringe.
Yep.
Is there any fuck, I'm sweating. Is the aircon off or something? Or I'm just
no, mate,
laughing.
These are just 200% alcohol.
Did you think, okay, new material
mm-hmm.
or you know, there must be things that you just cannot not keep saying because they
yeah, like I do. Go. I think I do 75% new, 25% like old.
Okay.
Yeah, but I also like to tell like some through line through it. So this year's show is exactly what I said there. I'm like the through line of this year's show is all this bad stuff's happening. Don't let them tell you you're not allowed to laugh about it.
Yeah.
And then I just go like, and all the material should be like, yes, this is bad, but this is funny.
So do you have like what they get into flow? Like, are you one of those people that needs a few drinks, needs to get high, just naturally? Is there something?
I have to be present in the room. Like, I only like a gig if I felt like I was there.
There.
If I can still do fine, which is like reeling off the material.
Yeah.
But when you feel like you're there.
Yeah.
You talk about stuff that's happening.
Now.
That's why you want to do it. It's like everyone calls it like surfing. Like you're actually on the wave.
Yeah.
And you're in the room. And that's where you're like, that's where you go, I'm a comedian. I'm being funny right now. The audience sometimes don't know the difference, but you do. And then it's kind of like, oh, I can do this.
So is it like a switch like where does it feel like you must get some days like your show? I notice you have the weeks off and you work weekends. Is that?
Yeah, I do. Oh, I'm working weekends, but the weekdays I still do little shows here and there. There's little like you do a 5 minute set here, a 5 minute set
like,
there, and I use that to
golf
test.
Day. So if anyone needs Amos, mate, inbox him.
Do a corporate, whatever.
Yep, corporate.
I do any. Like a lot of people start to sell a lot of tickets and they don't do the little clubs, but I'm like I do everything.
Yeah.
Because I go, the reason I got halfway decent at stand-up was I did as many of these shit gigs, which makes you tough because the room's bad.
Yeah.
And then a lot of people get to the big room and they stop doing that and you go, no. That's the thing that made you strong enough to jump up to the big room. Like you got to stay.
Yeah, totally.
You got to stay hungry and still test out your skills in the bad room. Otherwise, you know, you're not the person that it made you into.
Yeah, if you don't know your lows, if you don't know your lows, then you actually don't know how high.
And comedy, you have to bomb. You just have to be bad. It's just like.
Do you notice it when it's happening?
Yeah, and then like you just address it. You're just like, well, this is terrible.
Like tough crowd.
Yeah, I'll just be like, this is shit.
I say like I've had managers meetings where, and like I'm one of those that I need some feedback.
Yeah,
and I'll go, fuck, tough crowd. And I've even lied down on stage and gone to sleep.
You've got like a small air of David Brent about you.
David who?
David Brent from The Office. Oh. Like you're the guy that would bring the guitar and like sing songs about the staff. But you're not like cringy like him. But you're clearly a guy that like wants to create a vibe at your work.
Yeah, I'll enjoy it.
You know, you're like, you're in the bit of the flow. Like you're not just checking in here. You're a person that's clearly trying to create some culture. And that like requires risk.
Yeah.
Because you could just be like, whatever. I'm like, name's on the company, baby. Yeah. Do what I say. But you're kind of like, you make this unique.
Yeah, I do. I try to. I love it. I fucking love it.
Give me another air fryer. Yeah. What's
the cop? Fucking hell. Hang on. Hey, out the door. How many fucking air fryers do you fucking need? Go around to Amos's house. He's got multiple air fryers.
I'm setting up a food stall at Gluttony.
This one does chips. This one does pavlova. This one does steaks. Oh, fuck. You are fucking funny. So, I do got to address some things. 2018.
Yeah.
Now, you tried for years, pulled all your supporters together. Instagram was not playing nice.
Are they ever?
And you couldn't get your blue fucking tick. Like, what the fuck?
It's the blue tick. See, I have it now, so we all do
yeah,
that.
Yeah. What was the fucking problem with Instagram?
They didn't.
There's only one Amos Gill.
Correct. Do you want to know how you get a blue tick?
T- tell me, because I need you to help me to get a blue tick.
I can get you a blue tick right now. Okay, here's what you do. The reason, you're either a superstar or the other way to get a blue tick is like this. You've got to set up a rival JP Drake page. So set up one that's like looks like it's copying and imitating you, and then it has to start posting horrific shit, and you go, "Hey Instagram, you need to verify me because I am the owner of a company, and if people believe that person is the real JP Drake, you're affecting my business, so you need to give me verification."
I'm a LinkedIn influencer. I've got the badge.
So I thought these people. That's what I did. I set up a fake Amos Gill account. And I just got it to like post horrific stuff for a bit. And I was like, whoa, hold on. I need a blue tick because I don't want people to believe that other Amos is the real Amos. And they gave me the tick.
Okay.
It's simple as that, okay, folks. Got that. It is as simple as that.
Do that this
week. Guy's pretending to be me.
Yeah.
And it's doing my brand damage. And then you get the blue tick.
He's a faker.
Although my Instagram, I've kind of dropped off. I'm all about TikTok now. I want to go big in China. That's my market. I want the Guangzhou dollar. I'm giving up on America. It's over. It's all about TikTok.
So is. Yeah. Do you think you have a market? Do you think you have a market?
Yeah. I think. You know what? If I was a smart comedian, I would be learning like Mandarin or Cantonese right now.
I'm working out.
I would be the Rove Live of China. I want to learn what the in Mandarin. Whatever he used to say.
What, huh?
Remember Rove? What the?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to learn that in Mandarin.
I reckon that's something you could do.
I'm going to look that up right now.
Look it up.
Because I've got a friend who did that. He actually speaks Chinese.
If he was on ball, she should have looked that up already for you.
I don't know. English to Mandarin.
Let's get the translation for it.
Shenma. So I post up funny like memes and go Shenma.
So why don't you do the audience your first loses TikTok the shit. Here with Shenma? Let's do Shenma on TikTok.
Shenma.
Shenma.
Shenma. And then we just superimpose a funny picture.
Okay. And that's, we can do that before you
we'll
go.
We'll keep the comedy simple. Yeah. You know, I don't really understand
like
much.
Vegemite.
Yeah. So picture of Vegemite. Yeah. Yep. And then you just go like, oh, and then I go
Shenma.
What's that about? There you go. We've just started a podcast meme account. We're going to call it Shenma with Vegemite.
Shenma.
You got that? Got that. All right. So, Amos, we're going to ask you a few questions.
Yep.
You're performing at the Adelaide Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
How many shows have you got left? I mean,
four to go.
Pretty much sold out. I'm actually going Saturday night.
There you are.
I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, Friday, Saturdays of the Fringe, 9:50 p.m. in Gluttony.
And after Fringe, what is next for Amos Gill?
Shenma.
Okay, so we are going to hit the China.
We're going to hit China. Now, I don't know what I'm going to do. I might be going back into radio. I don't know.
Radio an opportunity there.
There's a radio opportunity for me. I also wanted to go back to America, truthfully. That's where I've been the last 2 years, but I just don't know what the point is. Like, it doesn't, no one's telling me anything's happening.
Yep, I agree.
I don't want to be locked out. It feels like, I mean, God, Hollywood's moving to Australia.
Yeah, they are.
You know?
They are.
The only reason I want to live in America over Australia is to
see Joe Rogan.
I'd love to do Rogan.
And I think Joe Rogan should have you on his show, to be honest. I think we should call out and start hitting Joe Rogan.
If you could, my friend.
I'm going to do it.
But they got over 300 million people who speak English. And so you can make a living on the road there. You know, in Australia, there's seven cities to tour and some regional dates. And then you kind of, by June, you kind of finish the touring. I just wish Australia was bigger. I want more people to emigrate here and I could stay.
Yeah. There's a slight amount of sadness, which you have to leave.
Yeah, you do.
Because to me, and I'm looking at comedy like now, you almost need a Netflix comedy.
Go to Netflix. Yep.
Comedy special that is filmed on one of your highlight shows, which must be edited to shit. Mm-hmm. I feel sorry for the guys.
Well, I just don't want to be in Australia. Like, there's no jobs for Australian comedians. Yeah, like, so there's the project.
That's not funny. No.
I don't want to do that.
So, are you...
Sucks to live here.
Do you think Australia could make a show that would encompass all comedians around the world, but make it here?
Mate, like, no, because you know what? The reality is what you're doing, like, this is it. There's all this talk about, like, man, when's the next good TV show coming? It ain't. It's YouTube creators, yeah. The next generation. I don't care about going on, like, some TV show. You just, the reality for this caper is, like I said before, you put your stuff out there, you do it consistently, you do it honestly, you find the people that like you. You get a Patreon, you get a podcast, you get videos, you tour, you do shows for them, and you make enough of a career that you do the stuff you want to do to your people. And the whole idea of being like a broad global sensation, you know, big global star is over, because no one wants to listen to, like, listening to radio now, where someone's doing clean material that doesn't affect the sponsors for 3 minutes in between a song. Why would you listen to that when you can listen to people speak open, honestly, in any way they want for an hour?
Yep.
It can't compete. It's just done. It's a model that is bust. And when cars get, you know, everyone gets like satellite radio or is able to play their podcasts. Or,
yeah, 100%. You know,
then that like that's it. And so there's just no point. You either get with the times or you're done. And I'm a whinger because I hate this, doing this. Yeah. Like I like doing it for you, but for myself, I've got the worst, and this is what I hate about myself. I have the worst work ethic for me. I got up at 4 a.m. every day for 4 years for a radio station that I didn't even like working at a lot of the time. And when I quit, I was like, I'm going to do my own podcast, do my own content. And I just didn't do it because I didn't have anyone demanding me to get there. And I remember thinking like, God, you are such a fucking loser. Like, put in half the effort you did for the radio for yourself.
Yeah.
100%. But it's so hard starting from nothing. That's the reality, is you think you're just like going to go back to like big numbers. That if I tie it back to what I said at the beginning about that 400 view video that got me the job, I just got to go back to that frame. And a lot of people do, like, even if you start off with nothing, if you just keep going, you eventually, if you're any good, will build something. You just have to like lose the ego of going like, oh, I've got 1,000 views or 500 views. Oh, that's not very much. My friend has 1,000,000 views. Yeah, but you could get there eventually if you consistently keep creating something. But I'm lazy.
So, if you had someone doing that for you, for content?
I'd love to have someone doing that for me.
Okay.
I'm currently looking for like someone I can underpay and abuse.
Yep.
So
look, these guys have got their hands up. guys have got their... But, yeah, these...
That's why I want to go move to China again, is because I'll just go down... I just want to move around. I'll go to the Adidas factory and be like, "Oi, what are you getting $1 a day? I'll give you $2 a day. Can you edit video?"
I learned. So these guys have put their hands up. There might be something there. Mm. We've talked about it a little bit. I do have some wrap up questions.
Okay.
I know you're an extremely busy person with sellout tours around the world, specifically in Adelaide at the moment. Mm. Do you read comments from people after you post, or do you post and ghost?
No, I read. My girlfriend's trying to make me stop because there's like a few that I've had that are really bad, and I sometimes just want to fight with people in the comments, and it's the worst thing to do.
They're kind of like me. I have my gatekeeper here that tells me don't bother. I think some people need to be put in their box every now and then.
Yeah, I just get like, I'm not even the best version of me though. I just get savage and I'm like, why? You know, what am I doing? I just buy in all the time. And then I start to zoom in on their profile pictures and I'm like, look at this fucking ugly head you tell me about, you know. It's like, just relax. It's just fine.
I do
that as well? You go through their profile pictures and you're just like, this guy.
Oh, man, that sounds pretty similar to me.
The zoom. That's how you know you hate someone. You never zoom in on someone you really like. No. No, it's always you zoom in right in their head and you just go like this. And they're wearing like a bad, you know, those Christmas cracker things. There was a family photo from that. And you're like, and his family's ugly too. Comes from a family of fucking nobodies. And he's having to go at me. And then you're like, man, I've been looking at this guy for 42 minutes. What am I doing? You're going all the way back to his school and you're like, yeah, look, yeah, that was the group he hung out with. No doubt about it. He played badminton. Of course he played badminton. And then you reread the comment and it wasn't even negative. You just misread it. That's me. I'm like...
I have this all the time.
Wow.
who do you think is one of the greatest comedians of all time?
Okay, I like Jim. Yeah. Jeffries. I like Bill Burr.
Yep. Fuck, you just call me Bill.
Bill Burr's the man.
Fuck. Oh, I think there's a bit of, there could be a bromance here.
Bill Burr's the best.
I hope.
I couldn't think of a guy that you're less like than Bill Burr, actually.
I hope Louisa doesn't get jealous. That's all.
No, don't worry, mate. Can you ride horses?
I'm allergic to him. I fucking die.
So she's an equestrian rider,
mate. Okay. So she's got something going.
Yeah, like Bill Burr. I like that. Who else do I like around here? My best friend in Adelaide is a great comedian. His name's James McCann. He's amazing. He's like one of the most talented people ever, but so painfully indie. An alternative that he refuses to let himself get famous, but he could. Do you know those people?
Yep.
Yeah. So you should check out his stuff. He's a maniac.
Okay. Will do. If you weren't doing what you're doing now, what would you be doing? It could be anything. So let's think you had the bank balance of Jeff Bezos.
Oh, if I can do it, if we're talking that.
Absolutely.
Moving to Mars. Don't want to talk to anyone. Don't want to run into anyone. First guy on Mars.
So, Elon, I'm there. Yep. Just put me on there with the other maybe 200
Netflix
people.
Netflix, Mars, bubble. Perfect. Don't need to socialize. I mean, no events. The best.
Okay.
If I my budget, if I didn't do stand-up, I'd probably be working for a law office. That's probably what I would be doing.
Okay.
Which would be awful.
Yeah.
I'd be although during the pandemic, I worked as a criminal defense. My best friend is a criminal defense lawyer. His name is Sam McDonough. If you've killed someone with your car.
Looking at V. I think it's hilarious that out of everyone, he's looking
at if anyone here has killed someone with a car, Sam McDonough, that's your man. No, he's just a great lawyer. And I worked with him in his office. And it was actually amazing to see someone, like a really good barrister in court. It's kind of exciting.
Was it like Suits?
It involved a whole lot more banh mi's in the food court in the Central Market.
Good place to have them. So if you could tell a young Amos, up and coming comedian of, you know, they're 15, they're 16, if there's some piece of information that you have now at the old ripe old age of 30, what information or what piece of advice could you give young Amos?
I would say that women's football is bad routine you did. Was sick. Do it again. No, I'd say swing for the fences.
Love it.
Swing for the fences. Go as hard as you can. And if you want to go somewhere, you've got to take the hate and don't be afraid to say what you actually think is funny.
100%.
And don't pretend to be a different person, which I did at the start of my career, because everyone in stand-up comedy was like, I hate footy. I hate sports. You know, I hate like blokey blokes. And I seriously like bought into that for a bit. And I was like, oh, I'm an artisty person. Then I was like, no, I'm not. I'm from country South Australia. I like this. I like that. I don't like that. These are my opinions. The end. I don't care if you're friends with me or not. Yep. And then in the end, I made more friends doing that than when I was a pathetic worm who groveled to anybody. That's just it.
So cool. If there was one thing, now people take this different way. It can be personal or it can be like a worldwide issues. Mm-hmm. The last few, I'd be honest, I've just thought about themselves, mm-hmm. which is fine. If there was one thing that you could do that would impact the world, what would it be?
I sometimes do think about sending an electromagnetic pulse machine, like a bomb that destroyed the internet. I just want it gone.
Wow.
I just like to know what it's like. I just like wonder if the world would be different if we didn't have
like this.
If we didn't have the internet. Just that, if that was gone. Maybe that would be the best thing.
You would be fucked. You're at a Wu-Tang party smoking blunts and you're sitting on the phone.
It's bad for my career, but I think it'd be better for the world if we just like blew up most of the internet. We kept Netflix though. There's like a special server.
Elon Musk is allowed
podcasting and Netflix, but all social media is gone.
Oh, that's good. And
titty pics on Instagram are allowed. That's still legal in my. It was a special EMP bomb.
I think
it's a very. Now that's tough technology to create. That is the CIA should be working on that.
Well, maybe that's something they can put on Prism or some one of the
We should do a Clubhouse like chat about that.
Dude, you're breaking away from my last question, which is hard hitting. Clubhouse?
Mm-hmm. I'm on Clubhouse. I haven't said a word. I just listen. I'm like a
So creep. Why the fuck aren't you a mentor?
I don't know why. No, I've got nothing to say on Clubhouse.
What do you mean? You
would, I just put it on while I go to sleep and just listen to people talk about like Bitcoin and tech.
It's
and
weird, huh? But very weird. You could do it for comedy.
Well, my favorite comedian in the world right now is Tim Dillon. So that's like, so he's always on it.
Tim Dillon's.
He's the best comic in the world.
Tim Dillon. Is that House? No.
No, Tim Dillon is a guy from New York. And if I could tell anyone to listen to anyone globally, it's him.
Okay. So is he on Clubhouse?
He goes on Clubhouse all the time. And like,
I'm glad we fucks around the link on there.
Yeah. He's always on Clubhouse. That's why I was bringing him up. But
so if I was you,
yep.
I'd just say, hey, Tim, fucking why don't you add me as a mentor?
He would say, I've never properly met you. Get away from me.
Mate, I must fucking gill, dude. I've got a fucking blue tick.
Unfortunately, he don't know if he respects ex-Adelaide radio announcers.
Oh, come on.
If I was Cozzy, he'd be into me. Because he's Karen.
Oh, dear. So, this is the last question we have. I know this is pretty hard hitting, this last question. It really throws a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just flagging it.
What do you love about the Drake Corporation?
Shit, I do got to talk about food to make it legitimate. What's your favorite meal?
I think like I'd love to be highfalutin.
Yeah.
But I'd say statistically, chicken parmigiana or chicken schnitty with mushroom gravy.
And whereabouts is the best chicken schnitty that you've had on the planet? You're gonna have to think about.
I'm currently enjoying Pepe Nero.
Okay. Where
they're that? Like in Woodville.
Okay.
They serve chicken schnitzels in a pizza box, so it's like a giant schnit in a pizza box.
Oh my god! Is that near the Woodville Pizza Bar?
Yes.
We've got to do this. This is just down the road.
Yeah, it's really good. Really. I put it in the air fryer. I like that. Also, I'm going to just go with the chicken. Because you know what? For some reason, I feel bogan when I say that, but I'm like, nah.
No. So on the weekend, I was at Murray Bridge and we went to the Swan Port, I think it was. So that's just had the new chef put there next to Puzzle Park. Remember Puzzle Park?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
And went in there, and it's called a chicken schnitty unicorn.
What's the unicorn?
It is calamari, a sweet chili mayo topping with calamari, and they call it a unicorn.
And is it good?
It was fucking unbelievable. Like, it was...
I'm not convinced, and yet... Well, that's two white meats, so
no, it makes kind of sense. It worked. You know? It just worked. I just didn't take a photo of it. But I'm trying to find a photo of it. But
and as far as a good meal in Adelaide, I love Osteria Orgy.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. And good pasta. I mean, let's face it. Nothing's better.
I'm a wog, man. Like, I just got to eat carbs.
So the last question. If you died and came back as a board game, what board game would best describe Amos Gill's life?
Well, given my current portfolio on ComSec, I'd be bankrupt on Monopoly. That's where I'm at. No super anyway. Should have gone. Rolled the dice on Mayfair. Well, lost.
At least you're not in jail.
Yeah, that's it.
So, Amos, thanks a hell of a lot for coming on to the podcast. We know you're so busy. Really do appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
We love supporting local. Even better, you're from Adelaide. And now, happy owner of a Sunbeam air fryer.
Which is great.
I want to see the first thing you cook out of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, mate. Come here, JP.
Woo!